Farpoint Media.
Hey, oh, there you go. Don't lose that. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the post-production offices of Rational Exuberance in the heart of Los Feliz and lovely middle of Los Angeles. I don't know where Los Feliz is compared to anything
else.
We're
east of downtown.
East of downtown.
Isn't it somewhere in Cleveland?
Yes.
It's where Hollywood began, actually.
That's right.
You know, the Vista Theater down
That's
here.
That's right. And Walt Sunset. Disney's very first studios just over there off of Vermont.
I'm Phil Lernis.
You
this
are.
Is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a guest.
Because this is our third time guest.
Our very first third time guest.
Uh-huh. He was in episode 50.
Setting a record.
There must
yes.
be other people that have done 5 or 10.
No.
Wow.
No, we are, it's rare to have people.
I'm feeling honored.
Of course, you're hearing the voice of Mr. David Soberlov.
Hello.
I did say Soberlov. I just had water in my mouth.
It's Soberlov.
I slobbered.
I'm not drinking. It's Soberlov.
Soberlov.
Well, we'll change that.
Yes.
That was your first mistake. Dave, you just got back from Europe.
I did. I was doing... I always do pretty well at Halloween. I'm a voiceover guy, and I got the creepy deep voice thing happening, so I get
right.
a fair amount of work at Halloween.
Yep.
And I was working for Sky TV and Fox in Italy, and it was very much like Charo's experience coming to America in 1965, because they would feed me, I don't speak any Italian, they would feed me the Italian, they would work with me until I could say it in a way that they could understand it, then I'd put the creepy on it, and it was for Halloween promos. And promos on TV there are very different than they are in North America, because here we'll just have clips of the shows. And throw a voiceover over top of
right.
it. They don't do it that way there. They have that in the middle, but sandwiched around it is a story. They shoot a story.
Like a little
on
trailer?
On camera, yeah. And they go to great expense, and it was very elaborate. They're trying to sell Halloween as a product over there because it's not really a big deal.
Well, this was the first thing that your story kind of was shocking to me, was I had no idea that they gave a rat's ass about Halloween in Italy.
Well, I don't know that they do, but I think
but they're trying
Fox
to sell
and
it.
Sky would like to sell it as a product, so they were
because then
to,
they could have horror movies and yeah, upsell so
they were,
all that.
They were selling their slate of horror movies and things for Halloween.
So quite frankly, of all the exports from America around the world that have sold, I would feel maybe the most proud about Halloween being an export, a successful export, because for those of you know, we have listeners all around the world. It's really still, to me, the most important holiday.
For you.
It is for me, because, you know, it's my Christmas.
Right. That's right. That's
your,
where
for
you...
For a guy that specializes in evil villain voices, it's my Christmas.
Now,
the
course...
other shocking thing that I just discovered is that apparently you know a lot about what things were like for Charo.
Well, I had to channel her experience in order to do this gig. It is really weird saying where you don't really. Of course, they told me what I was saying at the time. I couldn't repeat any of it. If you,
so you don't speak Italian at all.
Not I say now. I say since I've been there, grazie, prego, and acqua,
because
I needed water and I needed to thank people for the water.
So did you on the way there? On the way there, did you when you realized that you had this gig and you were going to be speaking in Italian? Did you get like phonetics tapes or discs to learn?
Rosetta Stone?
I had 2 days notice. I had no...
Rosetta Stone.
They found my website and said, oh, this is the creepy villain guy from America. We need to try this out. And I was starting to do some work with them, actually.
What is that
remotely.
Website? What is that website? If people wanted to find
Sobolov.com.
it. Sobolov.com.
Look at that. And we'll also have a clip of the thing you did in Italy. It's on YouTube, right?
It isn't, but I can get it to you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Awesome.
I posted it to my Facebook account.
Oh, that's where I saw it.
If you saw it.
Yeah, yeah. I did see it. It was awesome.
One of the things. It's also weird. In Italy, they're pretty advanced. Their menu on their cable system, or their Sky is a satellite system, has you can speak on the different channels. If you click on it and you're trying to decide whether or not to choose it, they can try to sell it to you. So they have video and they have voice. And they had my voice on there that day to try to get people to watch their channel.
Wait a sec. I'm scanning through and I see all those bars. I'll clip a little pop-up commercial will say, you really want to watch this channel because all of this stuff's on there. Mm-hmm. Wow. That is awesome.
It's very Minority Report.
I'll say it is. Does it scan your eyeball too? Going, hey, John, you might like a Guinness.
They're working on that. They just did their first 3D sports event there too. And I asked them about it. And I said, "But it's like TV in 1948. Are there 50 people watching?" They said, "No, there's 6,000 3D sets in Europe." Who knew?
Wow.
Well, I mean, they all of Europe was 16 by 9, the televisions, long before anybody had
a wide screen
here.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first got involved in film distribution, and it was international distribution, I had to, you know, the first time I saw an anamorphic disc, you know, I'm playing it and go, what's with this squeezed image? How is this? Okay, it's anamorphic. And what if?
What?
You mean it's letterboxed? No, it's not letterboxed. It's anamorphic. It'll automatically play for 16 by 9 televisions.
Right.
A what? A what television?
And speaking of HD, I just read today that a show that I enjoy, The Amazing Race, is finally going HD.
Well,
it had not been HD all these years. It's the last show on network television to go HD.
Wow, it looked incredible, though. I mean, for not being HD, you'd think they would be first with all that scenery.
Well, they probably didn't have the budget to get the little adapter plugs for their battery pack chargers in the various countries. So they just, you know, they found the $50 and they're doing it.
Good for them. That's a smart budgeting decision right there.
It is very interesting that here we're supposed to be, you know, the capital of worldwide global entertainment. And... the production company that I used to work with in Pasadena, the president of that company had been shooting HD television programming in Japan as early as the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, we were still working with VHS
tapes,
discs.
Yeah, I know.
And they're, tapes, yeah, not discs.
Well, I remember going to Australia in 1996 when they had least widescreen format. I don't know if it was high definition, but my eyeballs popped out of my head because it was so much better than North America.
Yeah.
Except when they would show the American shows, they would get Letterman like the next day, and it looked like it was a print from 1934.
Yeah, right. It was all that kind of crap.
And when you went, so that was Australia in 96. And was that like Charo going to the UK in 1955?
No, because they spoke English.
You know, I always wanted Charo to overthrow a government so that we could call it a coochie coochie coup.
Oh my God.
I felt like the whole gig was Charo without the coochie coup.
Oh, yeah. Because you weren't being
without
cute
the coochie
enough. Coochie. Oh, my God. So they fly you. And I saw that.
Well, started doing some stuff at home, right? And then they go, this is 9-hour time difference. We don't want to deal with this. And they just flew me out there.
Wow. And I saw what you did. I mean, it was fantastic, but incredibly short.
Well, there was several things that we did.
I just saw the one.
A lot of interstitial stuff, a lot of that menu thing that we were doing for their
but basically studio. One day in the studio.
We did about 4 days, but it was only like an hour each time. It was basically a paid vacation to Europe.
Wow.
It's very, very nice.
No, when we've had Dave on in the past, we have talked about your voiceover
Union.
Work. We have talked about... a little bit, but it's always been within the confines of discussing union politics,
yeah,
because you've been kind of our go-to guy at various times
for the Screen Actors
talking about
Guild.
Screen Actors Guild elections and the negotiations with producers and union merging. So we never really got into any great depth about your background. And I was wondering if you could maybe share with us how you got started. I mean...
Well, I got started as a French horn player many years ago. I was making my living as a professional French horn player in pit orchestras.
I did not know that.
And then I met Dean Haglin almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
In Vancouver.
Don't even remember.
Did you get a picture with him?
No.
Nobody ever wants a picture.
I got a loot bag. The parties. But you were working at something called City Stage doing theater sports.
Oh, yeah, Vancouver Theater Sports League.
Just ran into you through some mutual friends. And
are you Canadian?
I was born in Canada. I have dual U.S. and Canadian
citizens. Hey, guess what I just got?
You got your U.S.?
I did my
you
little...
Passed the test?
I got to be sworn in, but I passed the test.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congrats.
But they didn't mention anything. I didn't want to ask about dual citizenship.
Well... Not that anyone at home really cares. I'll just touch on it briefly. But under the circumstances I'm in, I can't vote in Canada because that would be pledging allegiance to a foreign state. But I was born there, so they give me the travel document and I can...
Yeah, no, the United States does not,
do not recognize,
recognize dual citizenship.
Right.
You are a citizen of the U.S. exclusively.
Right.
Canada recognizes...
dual.
Yeah, and then there's something else. What is landed status?
That's well, in Canada, landed immigrant is the same as getting a green card here.
Mm. Right. Yeah, right. So that's if I marry an American now, then she technically would be a landed immigrant.
But Patty would be so pissed. that I suggest against it.
When I came
your
back
girlfriend from, is lovely. Why would you want to?
Why ruin it with a marriage?
When I came back from Italy, on my passport, it always shows the country where you were born, even if you are a U.S. citizen. And the questions are getting really bizarre at TSA these days. He was, well, it's not TSA at that point. It's actual U.S. government customs. And they said, how long have you been a U.S. citizen? Which I thought was kind of irrelevant because I had a valid U.S. passport, but I played along and I said, well, since I was born, he said, well, how is that possible? Anyway, we worked it out. He let me home.
So wait a sec. When you travel, do you then take your Canadian passport out and then your U.S. passport in? Or
not
just,
since 9/11.
You
I
just
wouldn't
stay
even
with
try
you.
That. I would never travel with two passports now. Not a chance.
Really?
No.
So what if the plane's taking the hostage?
Canadians get to go free.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn it.
Yeah, I take my chances.
Oh, okay, awesome. Okay, good to know. Now, okay, so that's how you got...
And when you're doing voiceover gigs in Cuba, and you have to go through Canada...
Well, they would just stamp my passport on a piece of paper. It's like going into Israel. You know, if you go into Israel, you can't travel in the Middle East ever again if there's a stamp in your passport. That
from the Israeli... Yeah, because when I went to Tel Aviv, they told me that. It was stamped in my passport, and they said... Yeah, you're not planning to go to Syria or anything else, are you? Okay, good. And then they stamped.
Is that going to wreak havoc with shooting in Egypt for
no
sequel to The Truth Is
I
Out
got
there?
A new passport now. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, right?
Well, right, you're U.S.
Yeah, I'm a U.S.
Yay!
Exactly. So,
you have to give up your Canadian?
No.
Good.
Yeah, I didn't even bring it to the talking thing. The
talking
it?
Thing.
Where the guy confessed.
Again, you are American now because...
I've lost my ability to
articulate.
Your
vocabulary... has gone down.
All of his U's are gone.
All my U's.
From the words like harbor.
Harbor. I can't say it. Yeah, now you hear harbor as just B-O-R, right? Color. I just say it like really flat now. Anyway, so from French horn, though, how do you get to... Did you always have this voice, or was that... Did the horn project the lungs to make it this articulate?
No, I grew up in a Jewish home, and I was bar mitzvahed. And right around the time of my bar mitzvah, I still had a very high voice. They were kind of wondering what was going to happen to me. When I was 14, it just dropped down into the basement. My dad had a voice like this.
Oh, really? So that's good genetics right there.
Yeah, fortunate genetics and a little bit of training. You know, of course, there's some acting in there. I ended up going to the Neighborhood Playhouse School in New York and studying with Sanford Meisner.
Mm. Wow. I didn't know that. And then from
we're
there...
learning so much about
and did
me.
You do voice work? I mean, did you go with the David Smucklers and the...
No, not at all. Just studied, you know, acting with Sanford Meisner, did a bunch of plays in New York City. And then I ended up back in Canada, and I was singing for a living. I was touring around with an a cappella quartet for a while.
No way. Doo-wopping?
Kind of, yeah. And I found out that even though I'm kind of a nerdy guy, that bass singers are cool. By default.
So,
of course.
Voice,
well,
cool.
That is, of course, that's the guy. You know, that's the pip you always wanted to be, right? Gladys Knight in the Pips. You always wanted to be.
And by then, I started doing theater. And let me backtrack a bit. I went to Edmonton for a couple of years, and I did a lot of theater there. Got my ACTRA card doing radio plays. And did theater there, got my equity card, and then I ended up in Vancouver, and I started to become the go-to guy for some reason. All of the amateur shows would hire a ringer and give you an equity contract, and I would do musicals, but they'd lower the key.
Oh.
This is a little bit before I met you.
I didn't know that.
That's
so you do those regional things and like doing all the... run for your or whatever.
Well, no,
Oklahoma.
So one, not even that. Like usually reviews and things. Mm-hmm. There was one instance where this town called White Rock, British Columbia, which is a little bit outside of Vancouver,
close to
the border. They were doing a Stephen Sondheim review, and you're not allowed to do a Stephen Sondheim review legally, according to Stephen Sondheim's agent, unless it's a prepackaged thing that they've created. They put together their own review, their own staging, and even though it was White Rock, British Columbia, Stephen Sondheim's agent found out about it.
Wow.
And shut him down.
And this is pre-internet and everything,
1995.
Right?
Wow.
So just...
That's early, yeah.
Yeah, somebody turned them in. Somebody was angry, I guess. And they called me with 6 days' notice. They had a whole sold-out run of 2 weeks. You know, every seat was sold, and they were desperate. And they said, grab any music you can and come down here. So we did, like, 30 songs, some Sondheim, some other things. But the deal was, with the legality and actors' equity and all of that, as long as we didn't get up off our stools, we were doing a concert.
Oh.
So interesting.
We did a concert. We acted it. We sat there.
But it was us.
And we were fine, and Sondheim couldn't do anything.
Wow. That's interesting.
In your face, Sondheim.
That, well, I don't want to be in his face. I like him.
Well, the same thing's happening in Santa Monica right now with Hoboken to Hollywood, and it's a Frank Sinatra impersonator. But all the reviews say, and he sounds a lot like that crooner you may have heard of, but there he can't be Frank Sinatra. At no point, at one point, they reference he's introduced as, and here he is, the chairman of the board.
Right.
And then the rest of the time, it's a 20-piece band behind him on a layer cake, white tuxedo thing. And he comes out and he sounds exactly like Sinatra, and he does all the songs because the songs, he's doing American standards. He's not doing anything that, you know.
Right.
But it's the same idea, right?
That was Michael Bublé's shtick, because he was from Vancouver.
Oh,
you remember
that's
him
right.
in Vancouver
yes.
years ago? And I saw him doing something for the Arts Club Theater there. And I was kind of looking up and going, this guy's channeling Sinatra. And yeah. within a couple of years, he was famous.
Yeah, right, right. And then
somebody needed a
tour.
Sinatra, and there he was.
Once he changed the pronunciation from Bubble to Bublé, it really took off for him. I want to know what did the French horn training and playing... What did that teach you that helped you in other facets of your performing?
Combining that with my training with Meisner has been interesting because there's a musicality in every character. And a lot of times I'll deal with the emotional basis of a character that I'm doing, even in a video game or an animated show. But that character, especially villains, there's something about them that sings. And it's part of their performance, and that
really, even as villain, because you have to be base and angry and all that yelling.
Well,
and
Meisner might have taught me to live truthfully under given imaginary circumstances, whereas the music taught me to project the character, not keep the character small.
Oh, right.
Make sure that the audience is experiencing that character fully outside of my body, even though there's a microphone right in front of me, and also to. I don't know, everyone has a song in their head all the time, don't they?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe
mine's
maybe
meow, 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 meow. That's all that runs through my head.
Yeah, but I think there's a musicality about these characters, and that's part of what I do, and that comes from the French.
That's
French.
Awesome.
What about the nature of learning how to play as part, because you were playing this in the pit in part of an orchestra. So what did that training of being part of this large ensemble, did that help you in terms of, you know, being part of ensembles as a actor?
I imagine part of what that might have done was giving the appreciation for everything that goes on around me. You know, here's something you may not know. Dean and I did RoboCop together.
RoboCop, Alpha
the
Command.
An animated series. Yeah.
That's now available on Hulu.
On Hulu,
isn't that awesome?
Hulu.
That Hulu. Would ever show up there.
And there were a couple of people that were hired for the sidekick to RoboCop. I played RoboCop, and there was this Nancy Minor character.
Oh, yes.
And
we had to go through a couple.
I don't know if she shall remain nameless or not.
Remain her nameless, perhaps.
Radon Chong.
To mention names would be so indiscreet. Radon Chong.
As Robert De Niro said, note drop names.
There was actually
Radon, of course, being an invisible gas that kills.
Well, it kind of in this case it was, because she apparently was having a little bit of trouble translating her skills into voiceover, and
yeah.
there was a lot of screaming and swearing and getting upset with the people behind
the glass,
and they said bye-bye, because who wants to deal with that?
Yeah.
You know.
And it is tough. I mean, she's great. Her roles in the Commando and stuff.
Was not a good fit.
Wasn't a good fit, and that's the thing. And
so, right.
and that's what, I mean, you do so well, is you could translate that into the microphone and onto, and it shows up on the video games. Was that your voice I just heard in Tour of Duty 4 Modern Warfare?
I've done a lot of
Call of Duty.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a couple of years now, but yeah, I played Lieutenant Vasquez in that, and that was interesting. They had these lozenges available to us that didn't have any English written on them that apparently were brought into the country surreptitiously. They would numb your throat so you could finish the session.
Because there was a lot of screaming on those.
A lot of screaming.
You know who brought them into the country?
No.
Charo, 1965.
Oh. I don't have the cleavage to do that.
No.
So she had to do that for me. And it's amazing that the 40-year-old lozenges would still be effective.
Well, yeah. So wait, it actually numbs your throat?
It numbs your throat a little bit so you can continue. And if you're screaming, you just scream through the pain and you keep going. I have semi-retired from the video game screaming.
Oh, really?
It has done some damage to the point where I'm not really singing the way I used to. I'm a little more gravelly than I used to, which is actually fine because I just, you know, use my acting training and use what I have.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do permanent damage to myself so I could never work again.
Right.
And it was getting to the point where, okay, well, here's the thing in general. Video games are heightened reality.
Yeah.
Much more heightened than film because, of course, they can do anything they want.
Yeah.
And nobody dies. But there's a human element, the voice. And they expect the voice to match that level
of heightened
reality and to actually be real and to be believable. You have to match what's on the screen. It's not physically possible for the most part.
Right.
So we're kind of at the point now in the industry where they either need to modify what they're doing to keep it in the realm of reality or just realize that they're going to have to do a lot of processing and a lot of electronics
or go
through a lot of actors.
Because you're going to burn them out.
Yeah, this whole expression, leave a lung on the glass. You know, if you did a good performance in a video game, you've left part of your lung on the glass.
You're kidding.
Oh.
That's horrible.
It's a pretty brutal part of the industry, for the screaming part of it. There's episodes where people have fainted, where people have thrown up in the studio. It's hard, you know.
I haven't heard this part of the industry. And yet, you're not getting resids, you're not getting a piece of the action.
No, that's the thing, too. You know, you have to negotiate whatever you can negotiate up front, and that's all you'll ever get.
Ouch.
Now, as a performer right now, you have, do you have an agent that's specifically for voice acting, or is that a theatrical agent?
No, it's a voiceover agent. I'm with Atlas Talent in New York. And as I try to segue into different types of voiceover, I've been doing more trailers for video games. You know, it's still video games, but it's trailers and commercials and this thing in Italy, which I got on my own. You know, it's just
on
my website. And I've got the agent there, and a lot of stuff. After a few years, I mean, Dean knows. You know, they'll give you a call.
They give you a call. Just call out of the room. That's how I got this Cinemax thing, the Femme Fatales. It's just friends who've, you know, written Pamela Anderson's VIP. They were on that. I was on that. And they remembered, you know, 10 years later, hey, come and do this show.
They were guests on this show. and then they hired him.
That's right.
Dean's going to be expecting you to hire him.
All guests of the Chillback Hollywood.
Dean, if I ever had an opportunity to hire you, I'd be more than happy to. It's always been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure.
I'm not just saying that because the electronic tape is running. It's always fun to be with Dean Haglund.
You also did a voiceover for my commercial. For the official Chillpack commercial that never ran.
And it may still be out there somewhere.
Still may be out there.
There is the truth out there.
Speaking of which, though, as our first third-time guest.
Yes.
Dave got a gift today.
He
from
did.
Us, did he not?
Did you get your gift?
I did. It's a wonderful freezy-cold Chillpack.
Yes. Well, we haven't put it in the freezer for you
it
yet.
It will be.
Our sponsor takes now it takes Dave's laptop computer and keeps it running fast and increases the longevity, the lifespan expectancy of that laptop by keeping it cool.
I have a Chillpack question.
Oh, please.
Does it actually prolong battery life?
It actually does. Ooh. What I've found with my own little MacBook Pro here is that when I put the cold one under there, that I get about almost 3.5 hours off the battery, where I would get 2 on the airplane if I don't have it with me or something like that. But now I travel with it all over the place.
Here's another question. We've had listeners pointing out to us these news stories about people actually scalding their legs, right?
Toasted leg syndrome.
These laptops are getting faster and faster, so they're getting hotter and hotter, and people are actually burning their legs.
Right.
Now, the Chillpack obviously will cool it down.
Yeah.
But if I put the laptop on the Chillpack and then the Chillpack on my leg, am I going to be freezing my legs?
Absolutely not, because it's insulated on the bottom. So you don't freeze your legs, just the laptop. Look at you go.
This feels like the Today Show in 1952 doing an Alpo commercial. Remember Ed McMahon and his Alpo commercials Johnny Carson?
Johnny Carson. Totally.
But when you say that, you mean it as a good thing.
It's a good thing. You've integrated seamlessly.
Think of how much Alpo they sold. Exactly.
Anyway, everybody can check it out and should. It makes a great gift. Chillpack.com, CHILLPAK.com. It's environmentally friendly, easy to use, and quite affordable. Check it out.
/ShamWow
There's no ShamWow. No.
No.
There's the ShamWow guy.
We're going to have to do something we've never done before. We're actually going to have to edit.
Nah, we'll leave that in. That's pretty funny, actually. Anyway, now you had a question, though, that was quite fascinating. I actually filmed till 1:30 last night in the morning and then got up bright and early to do this. But your question was quite timely about Andromeda strain, the 1971. I don't even think you know about this,
Phil. This is something I have been wondering about for many, many years, and it's something that really disturbed me but also fascinated me. In the Andromeda strain, there is a scene with a rhesus monkey or whatever type of monkey he is, and he either is a better actor than Brando ever was, or they actually killed this monkey. Because show, you remember this moment in the film? And it's a very long shot. And it's one take, obviously. There's no cutaways. And this monkey goes through so many emotions. The pleading, the suffering, the dying.
That monkey's a great actor.
I think that monkey...
As I once said,
I want to know if that monkey's a dead monkey or if that monkey's a great actor.
That monkey is a live monkey.
Wow.
That monkey is also not acting.
Oh, so they did something to him.
And here's what they did. Robert Wise... Yes, I heard about this because on set... One of the directors actually hangs at the farmer's market at 3rd with a lot of the old-time movie makers and screenwriters and stuff like that. And so he went researching online and was texting last night to ask this very question. And he pulled it up. It was actually on IMDb somewhere, like deep in the bowels of the trivia. But what they did for that scene is the monkey, if you notice, is in a glass enclosed cage. And they closed the monkey in there where he had oxygen. The set itself, the lab, was then sealed off and filled with carbon dioxide. Completely carbon dioxide. And there was an assistant just off camera with a bottle of oxygen. And he had his own oxygen supply as well. But then the camera and everything was outside the set. So it was a sealed CO2 chamber. And then when they opened the door, CO2 started flooding in. And basically the monkey started freaking out and suffocated to a degree. He passed out. And then just when they yelled cut, they resuscitated him with oxygen and flooded the room, opened the doors, and CO2
still pisses me off because they tortured that monkey. But it was 1970, so you could still do that then.
That... is leaving a piece of lung in the glass. That. Next time you complain, Mr. Soberloff.
It was such a compelling scene. You could never do that today.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
a chance. Remember when they did, I don't know if you remember this crazy romp, Dustin Checks In?
Dustin Checks In, of course.
Sure, with the monkey kicked out of Canada.
Why?
Wasn't it? Halfway through the shooting because the SPCA said, no, you can't do this.
Oh, because they were treating the orangutan so meanly?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was the guy from Friends, Chandler.
No. Really? Was it?
Yeah, Dustin Checks In was...
I thought that was Jason Alexander and Faye Dunaway and...
Oh, maybe it was.
No, there's another one, and now you've segued into a story about me that is, you know, I'm not necessarily proud of. But apparently once at a bar, drunk, I went up to Matt LeBlanc, who did the baseball movie with the chimp.
Yeah, right. Isn't that Dustin?
No. And anyway, and apparently I went up to him. This is what I was so, and I was very drunk and I said, You're him, you're the guy. You did the movie with the baseball playing chimp. And he said, Yes, you know, being very, and I said, dude, that chimp is a good actor. Yeah.
Nice.
How were you told that you said that? You don't remember
from my
that.
Friends, yeah, my friends. That
what was his
me.
Reaction?
Yeah, apparently not.
Not good.
Did he return
not,
you?
Yeah, not.
That's why he's never been a guest on the show. He'll no three-time return for Matt LeBlanc or a single return.
I have another story about, you know, he did that series Joey, right?
Remember
the spinoff?
Spinoff, right?
I didn't mind that.
That
was kind of entertaining.
And I have I think it's our producer, I think Lyle Scozzi, was a fan of Joey and of that show. And met the lead actress. There was a lead actress on the show, or whatever, and met her.
She was from Sopranos.
At a party, and said to her, you know, he was like really excited because, you know, he thought, well, she's going to love the fact that I love the show.
Yeah.
Because it did get kind of trashed because I think, you know, automatically it's just so easy. It's not Friends. It's not, you know, and So he said, well, she'll love it. I'm going to, you know, I ordinarily don't do this. I don't go up to actors and tell them I love your work or whatever, but I bet she'll like it. So he went up to her and he said, you know, I watch you on Joey every week. I think it's a great show. And she said, it's not funny. Shut up. And walked away from him.
Oh, so yeah. She thought he was
automatically taking the piss out of her. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's sort of...
Isn't that funny?
That is funny. I guess that's the thing, you know, when you get a compliment, just thank somebody.
Just thank the wonderful thing about this show, the Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, is that while I'm listening, I mean, I'm hearing what you're doing, and I'm doing it now because I'm sitting here, you tell a story, and it leads to another story, and my mind is just flying across the spectrum of entertainment. I'm thinking of Betty Buckley in 1986 or whatever it was when they did Carrie the Musical.
What?
Just a story popped in my head.
When did they do Carrie the Musical?
They did Carrie the Musical for 6 performances around 1986, and they're doing it again.
King's Carrie the Musical.
It was a huge flop, but it was...
really?
It was hilarious.
But they're doing it again.
They're doing it again, and who knows why. Betty Buckley is standing in front of a New York audience who can be brutal.
Yeah.
And they do not hold back in their reaction at all. And tears are streaming down her face as she sings a tender ballad as the mother of Carrie. Tears are streaming down our faces, too, because people are dying with laughter and laughing in her face. And I felt so bad for her. Maybe her tears were tears of sadness, joy. Who knows?
Because the musical was so ridiculous.
But I admired her so much because she would go on radio and TV and push that show. Tell everybody how wonderful it was until the day it closed.
6 days later.
And then she could tell the truth.
Wow. Yeah, we've talked about this before. And you know, it's so in vogue. For lots of different types of people, even while they're doing the job, never mind promoting it, but to kind of wink at the audience, you know, collecting a pay. I don't want to mention names anytime. Basically, John Voight acts now. You know, it's just like, wow. I know this is crap. I know I'm picking up a paycheck, but I'm winking at you so that you know that I know it's crap.
Right.
This distancing from the material instead of, you know, having enough integrity, I think, to, you know, play it.
Yeah.
Play it. If you're doing the job, play it.
Probably one of the reasons that I experience so many vocal problems screaming in these things is because I don't want to have that attitude.
Yeah.
When I jump into something, I'm in it. You know,
it's called voice acting for a reason.
Yeah. Well, any sort of performance. You know, you don't want to see somebody phoning it in from Toledo.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I just went to a fan convention for Beast Wars, another show that I did in the 90s.
Awesome show.
In Indiana. And we were just talking about the process. And I have to feel like if there's a sandstorm, I'm in the sandstorm. And you'll believe I'm in a sandstorm. And if, you know, I have a conflict with another character, I can't phone it in. You have to really think it's happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or what's the point? You might as well not even do this.
Right.
And then when you have done the job, you know, the idea of distancing yourself from it, you know, it's just, you never know. And I understand it. I mean, I totally understand the kind of the need, but you never know. We've talked about this before. No matter how bad a work is, you know, a whole lot of people still like it.
Yeah.
A kid and his dad drove 5 hours just to meet me and have me sign a toy. And I'm like, you know, this happens. I haven't been to that many conventions, but usually there's one or two people, I'm sure this has happened to you, who are huge fans. You don't even realize the impact you have. And you're like holding back tears because, wow, somebody really was affected that much by this little thing that I did 11 years ago.
Yeah, right. And they completely, and for your mind, you can't even remember what you did. And how to respond. It's like, oh, good for you. Like, I never know what the proper response is to, oh, yeah, I was on my deathbed and I watched an episode and you made me smile, which then got my heart rate up. And I was, you know, good. Here's an autograph. Like, you know, it seems everything is ineffectual to that kind of fandom.
It's like being in theater, right? And those nights when... boy, the house is a lean house. We don't have a lot of people out there, and there are actors who, you know what, they're not giving their best performance because, boy, the house isn't full. And when I used to direct, especially young, like, acting students or whatever, I would always say, you know, those are the nights when you really want to give it, because those people who show up to that show that isn't getting the big crowd, those are the people who should be rewarded for being there. It's easy to go to the show that everyone else is seeing, that has the big marketing budget, that's the hot ticket. But to take a chance and to spend your hard-earned money on a show that maybe people aren't everywhere talking about, but I'm going to take a chance. This might be interesting. Reward those people.
I may have told this story on another episode of this program. I'm not sure, but when we were you in the room when I was doing RoboCop, and a fellow named Jim, who shall remain nameless,
I've
named enough names here. There's a moment in the franchise of RoboCop that happens every TV show, every film, where he encounters his family again. He was, you know, made into a robot, but his family thinks he's dead. And he has to save his family from something. And this was happening in that particular episode. And I was trying to perform it with some integrity, even though it was what it was. This is what I was called on. You know, Jim was seeing that I was taking a little more time with something, and I think he needed to go and, you know, have a cappuccino or something. And he said, I noticed the mature rating on iTunes. Can I use
off-color
words here?
Yep.
He said, David, it's just a fucking cartoon. And I said, Jim, it's got my fucking name on it.
Oh.
So.
Little tension in the room.
It was quiet after that.
Yeah.
I'm good
for you, though.
I want to do a good job. I want the. Because now, especially now, I'm seeing what the reaction it has at home. I'm really grateful to be able to do this for a living.
Absolutely. And, you know, I never thought RoboCop would ever show up again. And yet, there it is on Hulu. Everybody can go and see it. I haven't. Have I linked it on my Facebook? Have you seen it there?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I think
Are you asking if I've linked it on your Facebook? Is that what you're asking?
I'm asking. Have you dealt with my transmedia strategy?
You know, I mean, in the larger sense, too, isn't this kind of an important part of just leading a fun, enjoyable life? Is, you know, because we don't always get the jobs and the opportunities that we know we can connect the most deeply with. So often what is in our control is how deeply can I connect with this opportunity right here, right now.
I don't know what it is. Just have, you know, my philosophy, just have fun with it.
And that's what's fun, is to connect with something as deeply as you can.
Yeah.
And whether it be a cartoon, whether it be, you know,
a podcast,
a podcast or conversation over lunch, which I'm really starting to get interested in. I keep looking at the clock going, I'm getting a little hungry.
A little peckish there. But now it's been I can't believe it's 2 years since you've been.
Oh, maybe a year and a half. It's been time, but you know, when maybe everywhere in the world is like this, but I've just found the older I get, the faster time moves.
That is so true. This was, we've been doing this documentary now. I've been followed by a camera that fills.
Well, for a year we were filming. For a few months we were prepping before that, and then of course.
Now it's post-production.
Yeah.
So that's going on 2 years.
Another wonderful thing about life, you know, this applies in different situations, but say you have a friend or a business acquaintance or someone, if you had a good relationship with them, even if it's 2 years later, you just pick up where you left off.
That's right.
True.
It's like the time hasn't changed. Exactly. So it's so good to see you. So tell us about the future of where we'll hear the gravelly amber tones.
There's so many NDAs in life now. I'm doing in video game land, non-disclosure agreements, and they're getting really
intense.
No damn
answer.
You can't even talk about what you're doing in the future anymore. At least in the video game land. I'm doing a couple of video games.
Some big deals.
Yeah, but it's there used to be these two-paragraph NDAs. Then they became one-page NDAs. Now they're two pages of, you better get a lawyer before you sign this NDA, and I don't. I just sign it, and I keep my mouth shut.
Right.
And then when it releases, I can talk about it.
Awesome. So what's releasing
window? There's not anything right now that's releasing. There's a bunch of stuff that released last year.
Oh, okay.
You know, there was some Brutal Legend I thought was a lot of fun with Jack Black. We talked about that last time. It was to be released, and it was okay to talk about it. And now I love it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Was that the
movie?
That was
last Christmas. No, it was a video game.
It was a video game. I didn't get this on my video game radar.
It's a hard rock, you know, the people dealing with the hard rock reality, you know, an alternate universe
of rock stars. Rock.
Yeah, well, metal.
Really? Metal, so it's a metal band game. Is it like Guitar Hero kind of thing?
It takes you through a story. I haven't played Guitar Hero, but you know,
you haven't played Guitar Hero.
And I was in Halo Wars. That was a big deal for
me. Oh yeah,
I was the Arbiter, the main villain in that.
Oh, awesome!
There's so many versions of Halo now. They're coming out faster and faster. So.
But that one was a huge deal. I remember playing that.
It's interesting in video game land because they basically have 3 months to make their money back. You know, they take 2, 3, 4 years to create the game, and they got to promote the hell out of it and get people really interested and sell those things. But then, of course, there's the massively multiplayer online games, MMOG, and those go on forever.
Right.
And, you know, they're moving more into that these days.
But do you do voices for that? I mean,
yeah. I'm doing one now that they call you in for on occasion, and when it finally gets released, you know, you talk about it, but it will continue on.
But the MOG is always my voice in the character. Where would I hear your voice?
Some of them throw characters in.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I haven't played one of those.
Like Warcraft. Isn't that an MMOG?
I always thought that was just that other guy had a voice thing on there that I was hearing on his head when I'm playing.
Maybe you just never turned all the characters on.
Oh.
As you encounter things that you
it's could, true.
Because years ago, people used to turn the sound off.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't want to hear the sound because the voiceover was
Yeah,
because
you hear like the bizarre Scottish accents at like 4 a.m.
People may have just heard me in a Monroe Shock Absorber commercial for Halloween.
Oh.
The road is a scary place. And then the guy comes on and goes, no, it's not. It's not scary. Monroe Shock Absorber is fantastic. The road is a scary place.
Wow, that's a chill.
That's fun.
Oh, awesome.
What about non-voice work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've talked about you know, you're acting on stage and screen and even radio plays. I mean, what else is Dave doing?
I may be doing some directing of a documentary voiceover, but that's not confirmed or.
Oh.
It's one of the most annoying things in the world of entertainment for me, that things are happening and you can't talk about them. At least maybe it's just a voiceover thing.
Maybe.
Because they're so secretive. They're so worried about the script getting out or the idea getting out.
Right.
They just don't want you
okay,
talking
well,
about it.
Okay, well, let's talk about non-voiceover. What would you like to be doing?
I would like to be doing more directing.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a lot of fun. I do demos for actors, and I have done directing on occasion. I think I'm good at it, and I enjoy it. So that's something I'd like to be pursuing.
Are you starting with, like, are you thinking theater and then work your way?
No, voiceover.
Do voiceover directing?
Do what I know.
Yeah, yeah. Because Sue Blue, I know, is she still, the lead
still
of the whole thing?
She's not as active as she was, but she still does do
because she
things.
Used to be at every audition I would ever
now,
be.
Something that I've been kind of turned on to, and I don't know how lucrative or what of a market there is for it, but on long drives, you know, the audio books. Have you ever
I
been?
Will not do audio books.
You will not do? Why not?
There's just something about it that doesn't compel me, you know, reading hundreds of pages. They're lovely. They're great to listen to. It's just not my thing. I'm more into characters.
Hmm.
But there's characters to be played.
There are characters to be played, but I don't know. It's just a long form that I'm just doesn't interest me. I'm not going to say no to any work that gets thrown my way, but it's just not something I pursue.
So you've been offered it, though, and you said...
Sometimes don't really it kind of steer another direction.
Awesome, that's fascinating. I imagine it is a lot of work though, because it sounds like, you know, when I listen to like a Michael Crichton novel and I'm on like chapter 27, you hear the guy go, chapter 27. Now the bomb is in the stadium.
I wouldn't listen to like a Michael Crichton novel on. I like listening to biographies and historical novels.
See, that's interesting.
That way, especially on the drives. And those, I think, could be interesting from a voiceover standpoint if you found the material interesting, if you were intrigued by it. And I always find that those, as opposed to the fiction novels, the voiceover work isn't really up to snuff.
Yeah.
It's almost like those are the afterthought.
Yeah.
Because there aren't characters.
I think a lot of them are done by amateurs, you know, because it's a cost factor, too. I don't think there's a huge budget for these things sometimes.
Well, I imagine.
Or they're done by the author.
Or they're done by the author.
Yeah.
Which sometimes those are even worse because the author, you know, when I a good example is Zippy Pinhead. Remember that comic strip series by Bill Griffith?
Yeah.
I laughed so hard when I read that thing until I heard him read his own comics. And it actually blew the entire series for me.
Yeah, it's like these commercials where they bring somebody from the company, from accounting, to do the on-camera.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work.
Never
like
since
those cash call commercials.
Oh, yeah. And
with
Dave's
creepy
from,
guy you don't want to look at.
Because the successful was Wendy's. When Dave was there, he was like a good spokesman. But then after that, we could save money by having our president do this. No, you can't.
It doesn't really work like that.
No.
Do you want to dip at all into union stuff while I'm here? Do you want to dip it all into...
Let's dip
maybe,
just
maybe
a
I
little.
How about where you are? How about where you are? I mean, when we last spoke to you, you had attempted to get into a position of power within AFTRA and had that door slammed on you. You thought you could maybe change things from the inside.
Oh, what a fool I was.
The
last thing that happened with me, I was... on a committee, you know, I'd been on the Screen Actors Guild Board of Directors and on many, many different committees within Screen Actors Guild. And the last one I was on was a voiceover committee. It was specific to video games. But there was this gag order that was put out by the unions about a year and a half ago when they started really working closely together again, which is not a bad thing, but the way they're doing it is not a good thing. It is a rule that says that if you're on a committee or in a board of director position, you are not allowed to disparage the other union. So in public, I could not speak freely, which is not really very constitutional in the United States of America.
Right.
I should be able to say whatever I want. I think a person's rights stop at your nose. Other than that, you should be able to speak freely. But you cannot speak freely.
But that was to the press or on podcasts.
Even in meetings. It was meeting that involved the other union, you could be fined. It was literally like $1 million. So everybody was quiet, couldn't say a word. So if I was in a situation where there was a joint negotiation, I couldn't talk about the ins. It could be perceived as disparaging if I discussed the other union's tactic not being quite what SAG
what
made sense. So I couldn't effectively do anything for the members anymore.
You couldn't negotiate
I was in the negotiating committee, and I couldn't have a decent discussion with the after people in the room, or I would be disparaging. Oh my goodness! So I actually at one point just decided, okay, I can't. I don't feel like we're able to do anything anymore because the SAG has lost so much power at this point. The producers have decided that, you know, AFTRA is a better alternative for on-camera. Episodic is now almost all AFTRA. All the video games are AFTRA. More and more of the animation is AFTRA. The only thing that isn't predominantly AFTRA now is commercials.
Right, that's still SAG.
And I think there should be one union, but I think it should be the Screen Actors Guild, my personal feeling. Just saying that is disparaging to AFTRA, and I quit the committees. I completely removed myself from anything to do with union politics so that I could speak freely on this.
So we seem to be, though, headed towards a merger.
It's a runaway train at this point, but again, I may be misinformed, but my understanding is that there's a different board of directors for the pension funds on both unions. So if they actually do merge the way they're talking about, all of your old pensions will be in the other two unions, and there'll be a new pension, third pension. They won't be able to merge the pension plans, no matter what anybody tells you. That's my understanding, is that it will be a merged union, but not the pension plans.
Well, that's fine, I suppose, because that'll get grandfathered out.
Far along you are.
But I don't understand. But okay, well, then I don't understand this, because it seemed to me all along that the pension plans are kind of the elephant in the room, that's the whole reason, both for AFTRA making an end run towards SAG jobs. Now, you know, and not that SAG didn't create the opportunity for AFTRA, but after making that end run to go and get what had traditionally, historically always been Screen Actors Guild job, i.e. television, that the big motivation is, God, we've got to get an influx to save our bankrupt pension plan. So if the pension plans remain separate, the AFTRA pension plan still needs a radical influx of cash on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know details, the financial workings of these pension plans, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And this is why merger hasn't really worked in the past at all. Plus, AFTRA is not just an actors' union. There's broadcasters and
radio singers,
right, all these people, and they all have different interests than actors. And I would like a union that is about actors. Yeah. And that's. But you know what? I'm in the minority at this point. I am. The runaway train is going.
Well, and not just actors. Screen actors. Because it's not. There are other actors' unions for stage
equity,
right?
A variety of artists.
Although I primarily do voiceover, it's all to do with something that is on a screen, you know. So I am a member of the Screen Actors Guild, and had made my predominant living through Screen Actors Guild work until the last couple of years, where it's almost all AFTRA.
Yeah, I know.
And they have a different corporate culture at AFTRA. SAG traditionally was very protective of the actors. The negotiating was a little bit more aggressive, and now there's no leverage. So they can play one against the other. There has to be one union, but I'm just not happy with the way it's going. I would rather it be Screen Actors Guild, but it's not going to be. It's going to be some new thing.
Once again,
is it a case like the old joke that turned out not to really be true? Fortunately, one should point out, but the old joke when Microsoft came in and bailed out Apple, and the joke was, you know, what do you get when you merge Microsoft and Apple? And the answer was Microsoft.
Yeah.
And I mean, is that your fear that when you merge SAG and AFTRA, what you're getting is AFTRA?
Yeah, exactly. That's what you're getting. And what they've created now is, what is it called? The problem solution? Where you basically create a problem and then have a magic solution to solve the problem that you created.
Right.
And that's what happened at SAG. SAG didn't have to let their jurisdiction fly away, but they just let it go. You know, legally, back many, many years ago, you know, this is kind of a moot argument now because of precedent, but the National Labor Relations Board ruled in favor of Screen Actors Guild, and the only jurisdiction that AFTRA had was work that was done in a live manner, like a talk show or a game show.
Yeah, right, like or news announcers.
But then SAG just said, oh, yeah, you can do that, you can do that. It started with soap operas.
That's right.
When they went from live, SAG just said, oh, that's fine, it's not live, but you've always done it, so you can just do it. SAG has been sort of the nice guy that gets stepped on. And it's also a thing about the world now. People are kind of downtrodden a little bit. I think it happened during the Bush years. People got used to less. People got used to not fighting for things and just dealing with the new reality. And people are just trying to make a living and survive right now. And
it seems to me greater with every passing year, this demonization of unions.
Yeah.
In general.
Teachers' unions, all of the ACLU.
Everything, they're supported by union. Oh, never, you know, and unions are really ruining this, and unions are, you know. And what is stunning to me is not that if you look in any specific industry, yes, you might be able to find, you know, examples of how
abuse takes place.
Unions are wielding too much power, they're wielding the wrong kind of power, they're sin. You can find, I have no doubt, across the large field of industries, many examples to support a case of, oh, unions are the fucking problem. It's what's stunning to me, though, is as there is a greater and greater economic divide and more of all the power and resources are owned by fewer and fewer corporations and individuals, that so many of just the populace at large is constantly being turned against their own best economic interests.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's big power, big money. You know, they will find, and I'm sounding very conspiratorial.
Yes.
I know you guys love this stuff.
Welcome to our...
They will turn the masses against their own interests to maintain their own power and to grow their own power.
Absolutely.
That's just the way of the world at this point.
It's I can't believe it. I mean, it seems very naked to me, but yet other people seem to be fine.
Well, because unions are socialism. You know, healthcare, providing healthcare. I mean, that's socialism.
You know, roads. And I hate those roads and those the fire departments and police departments. I don't like
socialism.
Yeah. Schools can't stand those.
Yeah,
Medicare.
Better get.
Don't want that.
Government, get off my Medicare. Hands
anyway,
off it.
Back to the entertainment world for a second.
Where it's sensible.
Where it is all socialist.
I know that we have a very short time left.
Yes,
I would love to debate a little bit about something you discussed on the program.
Oh, okay.
Here we go.
The Warren Beatty epic.
No. Oh,
Red singular.
Yeah, red singular.
I'm going to be in the middle on this debate, aren't I? Yeah.
I went to this film because of you guys.
Uh-oh.
I was falling asleep in this film.
You weren't enjoying.
If you listen to the conversation, you'll again very carefully. You'll notice that I'm pretty well in the middle on this thing.
Dean talked about how they were comic geniuses because they were mature and they were able to. Yes.
Okay, I didn't say comic geniuses.
You know what drove that film? The musical score. They were pushing the emotion.
Well, no, you know what? I said, and this was very much my enjoyment of the film, and I said this on the show, was that the casting was so good throughout the whole thing, and every time someone new showed up, it infused energy into the film. Maybe for a short bit of time, but it infused energy into it because
enough
you go, oh, Ernest Borgnine. Oh, and they're giving him something fun to do. Oh, he's fun. Now we
Richard
move
Dreyfuss.
On.
It was a stunt casting express, and it was a red, 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 red world.
Oh, that's very nice.
That's
very
right. Nice. That's quite right. But
Wait a minute. I thought we weren't discussing socialism.
I'd like to point out that that was also one of my favorite films,
I love that film.
Well, to me, this
everybody,
is the equivalent.
But, come on.
Not the equivalent.
Those people were classic comedians. one and all.
But let me ask you this.
Mirren with the machine gun.
Helen Mirren was my favorite part of the movie.
With the machine gun.
No, the machine gun and the boots.
The boots.
Together.
She's fabulous, and she's clearly having fun. Here's what I would ask, and I'm not somebody who ever thinks that box office success is equal of quality. That said, this film is doing quite well. It's holding on to its box office every week. It's having a minimal loss from week to week, and that's not a product of marketing because they're not spending big marketing money on it. So it does seem that it's getting good word of mouth. Why then, as someone who did not enjoy the film, do you think it is getting good word of mouth?
All those you have, I like this star, I like that star, I like Ernest Borgnine. People show up for different reasons to see films. And there's something, some little confection in there somewhere for everyone. So they're going to show, and it wasn't a horrible film, but it was something I would have rather not paid $16 for.
And see, here's the thing, because I can agree, I can totally understand that someone, and I was aware during the movie that, man, this might be really, really slow. This might not be moving right now. And I made the choice to find what I would enjoy in the movie.
Yeah.
And what I think, though, and I'd be curious about this from people who do like the movie a lot, is, you know, how much of the joy is directly related to the fact that all these actors bring with it such goodwill and such a body of work. You feel, you know, it's almost like they're bringing a character with them.
Right.
And that carries the film through, because so many action comedies that we go to see, I feel like I'm not getting any characters.
I'm just getting action and special effects and
explosions. And here, because those actors bring a fairly well-known character with them, it almost is like I'm getting to watch characters play, and there's something refreshing about that.
Ernest Borgnine was delightful to watch.
You care when you thought Morgan Freeman was dead.
Yeah.
You really cared. I remember. I mean, you said this. I was so shocked when they killed him. Look, if that wasn't Morgan Freeman, you wouldn't have given a rat's ass.
Yeah.
But it's more. They killed Morgan Freeman
in the middle of the movie. Oh, wait, he's done.
You know, another film recently that I enjoyed that most people didn't was The Town.
Oh, really?
Now, why do you say that most people didn't enjoy this? I enjoyed this.
I hated that movie, but I just thought it was.
And you bought Ben Affleck as a bank robber?
No, this was my weakness with it, because I liked the film. I thought it was very well done, and I thought Ben Affleck, the director, did an excellent job. Ben Affleck, the director, might have been better served by casting a different lead, only because Ben Affleck, who always was kind of an interesting actor to me, has been scrubbed so clean and with the veneers and the plastic surgery
ignore the veneers in every movie now. I mean, but you get a film from the 1600s, everyone has perfect teeth.
But it's just like, I can't, whereas I can buy Jeremy Renner as being in that neighborhood, I can no longer buy movie star Ben Affleck in that neighborhood.
I suspended my disbelief on that one.
But that was it. But other than that, and so I'm shocked that you're saying that people aren't enjoying it. Certainly the reviews were very good, and there's a lot of Oscar buzz about it. And
I just thought it was one of those films where I didn't have to try too hard. I could just sit back and be entertained and go along for the ride. And I felt, though, that Red was forced. I felt like the actors were doing their best to
keep the energy up
and the energy, but it wasn't really in the script.
I see. So they were all kind of sugared up.
Some of them, yeah. I mean, I would see the film just for Helen Mirren in the boots.
Yeah, no, that's kind of it, isn't it?
The fact that she was willing to wear those boots and to see her toting a machine gun is pretty.
That's awesome, right?
But not worth 60. That's worth about 40.
I have a poster of that now above my bed.
So here's then the point to all the listeners of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. When you hear our movie reviews, you have to take it then with that sort of consideration of where we're at. And if you see a movie that you disagree with, please come on the show and hold our feet to the fire.
Although you are taking back his Chill Pack now.
That's right.
How dare you?
I'm not criticizing the review. I appreciated the review.
No.
And it's always just opinion.
Well, that's exactly it. And we are opinionated, some more so than others. I'm not pointing to somebody.
Yeah, look, sometimes we'll even include Adam Sandler comedies on our top 10 films of the year. I'm not going to say which one of us, because we don't like to mention. Bobby De Niro always told me that I shouldn't drop names. So
I saw it again, and I stand by that, by the way.
You can drop them, just pick them up before they hit the floor.
There you go, right there.
Can't wait to see what Adam Sandler movie is going to appear on your top 10 list this year.
There's only one to choose from. Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway, again, thanks for coming by, Dave. It's
thanks
awesome.
Thanks for having me.
It's been fantastic having you again on after, what, about a year?
Well, we'll certainly put in the description of the show on our official site, chillpackhollywood.com,
yep.
What the previous episodes were, and yep. Because people can find every single episode of this show at Chillpack Hollywood. They can download, they can stream, they can subscribe via iTunes. They should also become likers.
Likers on Facebook.
We're looking for 1,000 likers before the end of the year.
That's our goal.
That's our goal.
No more haters.
No more haters.
No.
Yes. Don't. Yeah. Don't turn off your like button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have at least 1,000 haters.
Yeah.
Already. That's not a problem.
That's not a problem.
Dave.
We got that list covered. We're still at the abandoned amusement park of the internet, known as MySpace, where you can
MySpace.com/ChillpackHollywood. Yeah. Where you can find the most recent show and a blog previewing the coming week's show.
Absolutely.
And it's so lonely there, there's an echo.
That's right.
Yeah, tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweed, digital tumbleweed going across the sites. And then, of course, we're on Twitter. I'm at D. Haglin.
I'm at Phil Lernis.
And our email address?
Chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. Feel free to send us questions, not only Dean and I, but if you have any questions for Dave. We'll forward them to him.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Voloboss, my last name backwards.
Voloboss, oh, look at that. I'm totally going to follow you. Were you tweeting while in Italy, too?
In Italian.
You were?
I was having someone
grazie?
Help me with that.
Really?
I said, grazie, prego, acqua.
Oh, that was your
three
tweets.
Three words that I learned.
Your tweets over and over.
And although Dave has non-disclosure agreements, those do not actually prevent us from plugging what he's doing. So everybody be on the lookout for that, the video game. It's really more of a one-man review, Charo 1965.
Till then, I'm Dean Haglin.
Bill Ernest.
See you next time. Bye, Dave.
Bye.